Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody is doing well on another nice-looking day. And the first day of October. Hard to believe, man. We are in October, and it is fall, and it's actually not 90 degrees, so enjoy it. We're here in the studio. Dan's on his way. Bill, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, and Drew is at the controls. And we'd love for you to join us as well. You can call us on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. Text us on the Drive, the hotline, by the way, sponsored by Skybar. You can text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and that number, 334-564-1840. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us, as is usually the case here on Wednesdays. JC, how's it going?
Good. How about y'all?
Doing pretty well. I mean, it's even though there's an open date for football, I mean, there's a lot going on. It's pro day for men's basketball, baseball practice. You know, cranking up.
Yeah, no, it starts officially Friday. Yep. They've been practicing for about a month anyway, but that'll be the first team practices. I've been out. I spent maybe an hour and a half or so out there on Monday, so I had a chance to watch some and got a chance to talk to a few guys. I did a story on some of the transfers.
Right.
And I'll have another story tomorrow on one of the transfer pitchers, Drew Whalen from Western Kentucky, who comes in after winning 10 games last year. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one to pay attention to. But, no, yeah, I talked to Lucas Steele for a second. He goes, yeah, I'm tired of, you know. So it's a lot of drills, a lot of work, just fielding ground balls, you know, hitting batting practice, doing these things that you're kind of doing in small groups. They're ready to just play a game. And so you get toward this point where you're like, okay, that's enough drills. You can only do so much PFP for pitchers, things like that, and then throwing bullpens. But now they get a chance to actually start playing a little bit on Friday, so I know they're looking forward to that.
Yeah, no question about it. And I know I've had a couple of people asking, you know, what's the schedule? When are things going to really get going? So good to hear that's getting going. And great weather right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
It's great weather for
it's nice. I mean, I'd rather it be like 77, but
sure.
I'll take this right now, 82, 83 degrees. It's supposed to be really good after today. Today's about the warmest day I think we're going to have now for look like the next. I did 10 days looking. For 10 days, it looked like 80 to 82 for highs.
Wow.
And low 60s for the lows at night, which is good. So I kind of scout my yard a little bit and started bagging it little by little, trying to get – so maybe I can put my winterizing on it a little bit now and get this thing done. So, but, yeah, great week, great weather. Looking forward to Auburn and Central Friday night, Auburn High Central. I'm going to go to that game Friday night to watch that one. It should be a good one. So do I mean, a few it's all, things in this bye week.
Yeah, it's all that's always a – very important ball game. I mean, both teams, you feel like, you know, both teams are accustomed to and expect to make the postseason, but it is a big one here midseason. And you got, it seems like, yeah, it's great having you know, Auburn Central then Auburn Georgia you know, coming up the following week.
Yeah, it's big right now because they changed the way 7A playoffs work. So this season, the four teams that make the playoff out of this region, which is Auburn, Opelika, you know, Central, Dothan, all those teams, you match up with Birmingham in the first round. So your first round playoff matchups are going to be Thompson, Hewitt, Trustful, maybe Hoover, Prattville, Vestavia, the four teams out of that. So your one will play that four. That's a pretty big deal.
It is.
When you start talking about, because that region is really strong this year.
The further down you move in this region,
the more you put yourself in peril.
The better your opponent's going to be from the other region.
And listen, Vestavia may be four.
Yeah.
Auburn's already seen Vestavia early in the season.
Yeah, and they didn't like what they saw.
Did not fare very well. I don't know that Hoover's in danger of not making the playoffs. They're not as good as they have been. that tells you how good that region is. So it's going to be a different and challenging matchup when you start talking about those teams matching up in the first round.
Yeah, and speaking of not liking what you saw, right?
Are you riding a segue?
I think we could talk a little bit about Auburn's offense the last 2 weeks. And you don't want to draw too many comparisons. College football's changed enough that you don't want to draw too many comparisons to, well, this is what happened in the past, and this is how it played out. But generally speaking, when the head coach, you know, when the offense is his bread and butter, and the offense feels like it's letting letting winnable games slip away, in year three, in situations where you felt like you needed to see improvement in the win-loss record for this thing to continue momentum, the experiment. It's been concerning, to say the least. I think what you've seen on the field the last 2 weeks and the way that things regressed from Oklahoma to A&M is especially alarming. You were on the field for both of those games. You've gone back and watched them. What's your sense of the turn things have taken?
Completely, to me, they're completely different feel. Coming out of Oklahoma, I was like, man, you had opportunities galore. Now, you should have run the football more.
Right.
But it didn't matter because you had opportunities in the passing game and just didn't make the play.
That's one where you felt like you were so close and you would feel like some minor changes would make a big difference and you feel positive.
And there's opportunities there. But coming out of it also went, I have questions about the ability for this team to drop back and throw the football a bunch. And then Saturday, my immediate question leaving that was, I'm not really sure if there was a plan. That was my immediate question.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if you had questions about this team dropping back to pass, they were answered. It's like, they don't need to be just dropping back to pass.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things to talk about. I mean, you have to start with, if you're an RPO team, then your running backs have to touch it more than 8 times. And 4 of those, I don't even count.
No, that's right, because they were in 15
yards or longer.
Let's set your punter up, give him a little more room.
Or set up a field goal.
Right.
So I don't care. So in my mind, you have 4 legitimate touches for the running backs in a run game.
In a game. And
here's the thing. If you're Mike Leach – and that's what you do. You throw the football, and that's how your offense is designed. Then I'm like, okay, if you're throwing for 350,
yeah,
then you okay, maybe understand that.
But you could have played 20 quarters in College Station, and Auburn's offense wasn't throwing for 350.
And you're throwing it a lot. But here's the other part of that too. Some of it's offensive line. Some of it's quarterback. Some of it is, listen, when you're on the other side of the ball and you know that team's not running it, it makes it really easy then to rush the passer.
Yeah.
So it felt like for me after a while, they're like, look, we ain't even worried about these guys running the football. We're just pinning our ears back and rushing the passer as much as we can.
And I don't even know if it was – I mean, yes, it was a lack of running the football, especially in light of the way the team ran the football – at Baylor and the excitement after that performance. But it also, like, keep in mind when you think about all the dropbacks called against A&M, very few deep shots. I mean, Auburn goes downfield.
You have one down the sidelines to Singleton where he makes a really good catch.
Yeah, he did.
Right.
You have the one to Perry where that's a well-thrown ball.
It's a good defensive play.
You
solid
probably
play by
need
the
to go up and get the ball.
I think Singleton, I think you go 1 for 5 on shots more than 10 yards downfield.
But I think there were only 2 that were more than 30.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I think
that's
it.
Or 20.
But yeah. So think about that, too. So, I mean, especially from a defensive perspective, it's an offense.
Everything's short.
It's an offense where things are taking a while to develop. It's rarely going downfield with the pass. Pass blocking's not necessarily the specialty of the offensive line, although I think you could argue there was probably time to do something in some of those in the plays against A&M. And you're not handing it to the running backs.
No, it's a recipe to see what we saw.
Yeah.
That it's a recipe to see what we saw.
It's the recipe, without making light of the situation, it's the recipe that had Tony Franklin, you know, having a mid-season change that year. Because that's a lot of the characteristics of that offense.
Yeah.
And what they were doing before it was over.
Yeah, you're looking, and the interesting thing is that we had this discussion after week three, sitting here, and we had callers. I had people on message board, everybody going, why they run the ball so much?
Yeah, throw the ball.
We got to throw the ball down the field. Got to throw the ball more. Got to throw it more. We need to see the more passing game. And I don't think that's why this has happened, but I think you've seen teams go, okay, all right, we're going to challenge that to make it happen. But regardless,
you're not just challenging. Think about that though, because you're not just challenging Auburn's team's ability to actually execute run plays. You're also challenging the coaching staff and Hugh Freeze
absolutely
to stick with it and consistently call run plays.
And I think there's part of this, too, is I think if you understand what you're doing, you can manipulate things. And it feels like there's some manipulation going on where, look, we're going to show you that we've got guys in a box.
Mm-hmm.
We're going, all right, well, the numbers aren't there. Okay, well, then they throw it. Well, then we back off. I think A&M did a bunch of that. Like, look, we're going to show you the box. And all of a sudden you snap the ball and there's four guys rush. They were getting pressure with four, but they looked like they were six or seven. But you're also like, well, there's not as many throwing lanes. And so you start to think about, okay, well, we're going to throw the ball quick because it feels like they're bringing a lot of pressure. They did at times. It's a combination of a lot of things. And it comes back to the biggest thing for me is that who are you? Right now, where can you hang your hat and go? Because it felt like through three games, you hanging your hat on, look, everything said, run the football. You start the RPO.
We're pretty good at it.
You can do a lot of things doing that.
Yeah.
Now it feels like I don't know that you can get back to doing that. Because I think you're going to have to throw the football at some point, no matter what. You're not going to be able to just line up and run it. You got to do some things.
No, but sometimes you got to run the ball.
You
got to
just run it.
Period. Just got to run it.
But what you saw, the point you're making there is that what you saw in the first 3 weeks did not lead you to believe that you were going to go 80% drop back.
No.
With Jackson Arnold on the road against two teams that were not scoring. Like, that's the other thing is you would think that, like, with the number of pass plays called on the road the last 2 weeks for Auburn.
You're down by three touchdowns.
You would have thought that, you know, you were facing a team that was scoring every time they touched the ball. And here's the thing.
Those teams had coming into those games. But you have to go, okay, well, this game's not like that. I mean, look, you get the ball back. And my thing, I look at, to me, there's three or four plays where it wasn't necessarily the play call. But it was the play call too, but it's situational. Get the ball back, you're down 13-10. You get your touchdown, you get a stop, you get the ball back, you're on your own 13-yard line, down three with 7 minutes left, got all your timeouts, and you drop back to pass on first down from your own 13. I would have run the ball. I would have liked to have seen them run the ball, but you drop back to pass. You also have time to either throw the football or get rid of it, and instead you take a 7-yard sack. It's over with. Drive's over. Miss second 17, that you're done.
Yeah.
That's it. And then I look back at third and one, fourth and one.
After the clock is going to stop. Yeah, you get a first down.
But after converting a short yardage at the goal line with a run play earlier in the quarter.
I look at that going, okay, would have loved to have seen you run the football. But on fourth down, you have to throw it somewhere. I don't care what happens. The ball has to be out of your hand. You can't take a sack. Earlier in the game, there was a fourth down, fourth and 15 or so. You're on about the 40-yard line.
You probably can't take one on third down either in that situation.
But you got to get rid of the football somewhere.
Yeah.
Fourth down, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to throw it somewhere. But there was another fourth down. It's fourth and 15 or so. And you're on the other 40-yard line. And it's like, okay, you're not going to punt. Go for it. And there were a couple of defenders there. But you cannot run the ball because you're not getting 15 yards with three guys in front of you. You got to throw it somewhere. And so that, to me, there's – it's a little bit of, well, you got to run the football more. It's a little bit of the offensive line's not playing at a high level. It's a little bit of quarterback's got to make some decisions that you're not making. A little bit of the wide receiver's got to help you a little bit because there were a couple of times where wide receivers ran through a zone instead of slowing down and giving him a window to throw the football. It's a lot. Just one thing right now for this offense.
Was there a point in the game where you thought it never crossed my mind against Oklahoma to make a quarterback change?
Halftime.
I was one, and you're not the first person to tell me you thought maybe they could have gone.
And like I said, it's not all there. The one thing I did think, and they went the other way to me, and it worked for a little while. They went slow. Huddle, get to the line of scrimmage, very deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
I would go the other way. Because right now, the one thing that is bothering this offense more than anything is defenses that are scheming them up. Yep. The faster you go, the less that defense can do.
I get the sense that they want to if they go forward on first down. But then,
And here's the thing right now. I think if you have a 25-second drive, you have a 25-second drive. But right now, what happens on first down, if it's second and 10 and you sit there and wait, right now it feels like that is second and 48. And so to me, you might as well just go as fast as you can and try to limit what the defense does. Does that lend you to running the football more or spreading the field? And I don't know. I think that's what you got to figure out.
Who goes in if they make a change at halftime? Ashton?
During a game, it feels like Ashton Daniels.
Yeah. I mean, if you feel like – I think the other thing would be if you feel like there are plays to be made, if the quarterback's not doing the routine, then maybe you go to Ashton Daniels mid-game and you feel like this is a guy who's faced this before in a longer
– Yeah,
given more time. Yeah, given more time to prepare, maybe it's Deuce.
It also feels like to me you got to figure out what you are. If you're a running football team, then I'm okay with – like Jackson Arnold can run the football. You go run the jet sweep, fake jet sweep. Like it almost looks like 2013 Auburn offense. I think you can do – Jackson Arnold, I don't think you can drop back a bunch with him quarterback.
I don't either.
I think if
I don't think 2013 would have been 2013 if you call 75%
drop back. No, it would not have been. And I think the other side of that is too. I think you look and go – like if you go, the best chance we got is to spread the field, go five wide, spread teams out, then I think that's where Deuce fits in. You go, look, almost two-minute offense. Take it out of his hands, snap the ball, let him make plays, and go on. But I don't know. I do think no matter what, in my mind, the first thing I think you got to do is do what you do best and then get tempo going to try to limit what defense is doing on the other side. I think that would be a good start.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Jason Caldwell with us. We need to get to our first break. Clay, hold on. You'll be up first when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
On Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive, 22 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. And let's get to the Drive Hotline, and Clay gets us started. Hey, Clay.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Jason just said a mouthful, and people that have not seen a game do not realize how much he just said. I went to both home games. Ball State and the South Alabama game.
Uh-huh.
And what I noticed, and I am just a lay person, I didn't even play major high school football. But what I saw USA doing in the second half, now this is a team that we are very much better than. We just outskilled them. But they outcoached us in the second half. We scored 3 points in the second half, right? Isn't that correct?
I think so. I can't remember. Y'all had like three possessions, but yeah, I think it was only a field goal, maybe one touchdown. Anyway,
yeah,
it was just a couple.
That's right. I mean, we couldn't get them off the field. These are two different things that I'm going to bring up.
Yeah,
we couldn't get them off field on third down because it would be third and 15, and it was obvious they were going to run a draw play and get 10 yards and make it fourth and five and go for it. And they converted all these fourth down conversions and all. That's one thing that was frustrating, is that people that are just so much in love with A.J. Durkins is, come on, you've got to do better than that. But the thing that I saw is that what they were doing on defense is they were putting eight men in the box. And immediately as the ball was snapped, they were rushing the backfield. The middle linebackers, the cornerbacks, everybody were rushing downfield going into zone coverage. And all we had to do is run the ball. They could. You remember that game against Arkansas? Who was that quarterback that ran the ball for like 750 yards against Auburn?
Matt Jones.
That day. Running straight up the middle, and we still ain't tackled him yet. He's still running through Opelika. We could have run the ball for 1,000 yards against USA, but they were showing a full box, not showing blitz. They weren't coming up on the line. They were just crowding the box, and right at the snap, they were dropping back into zone. And it was fooling our play caller, whoever the three are calling the plays, and that is frustrating. And we are running, it is absolutely high school plays is what we're running. I mean, it is like what we ran when I was in junior high, 7, 8, 9, that was our plays. A slant, a fly, not a slant. We dare not run a slant. Auburn has no clue what a daggone slant is. We ain't run a slant since Terry Bowden was our coach, I think. We do not do anything over the middle.
No, don't use the middle of the field much at all.
Well,
if we do, we get a holding call by the greatest supposed lineman that was available in the portal. That is what is so frustrating to us Auburn fans is, man, how in the world does that keep happening? But they are absolutely, they're just bluffing, and we will not. 8 running plays in the game. After the Baylor game, Bill, I was so encouraged after the Baylor game. It was like, yes, finally.
Yeah, you had 16 each for Jackson, Damari, and Jeremiah. Well,
Clay, you know what you thought after the Baylor game? You thought your offense had an identity. You thought maybe you'd found something that you could consistently lean on to beat teams, to win games, and it's totally different now.
But here's the thing: our offense does have an identity. We're just not using it. We had on the game cinching drive, mm-hmm. when they had cut it to one score and we go down and score, 7 rushes on the game cinching drive, 1 drive. At Baylor, we win the game. The entire stinking game at A&M, 8 carries by our tailback.
Yeah, well, of course, you explained it, though, Clay. It's because they were dropping. They were giving Auburn the run. It was obvious that they were giving Auburn the run. And when it's not obvious, then Auburn's, they're counting the numbers there in the box. And that means they're going to throw the ball if there are more numbers than they expect in the box.
And Bill, that makes it even more frustrating because, like I said, I am not – I'm a basketball guy. I'm not even a football guy. I can see – my wife can see it, and she doesn't even understand sports. Is whether they're running out every time. Every time they're just running out. So why don't we run? It's like – I don't know, and that is what really, really frustrates you, especially when you're supposed to have an offensive-minded coach that's calling the plays. I don't give a flying care what they say, who's calling the plays. He's calling the plays.
Oh, yeah. That don't be concerned about the who's calling the plays. It's Hugh. Hugh's calling the plays.
It's his offense. Yeah. He has ownership of it. He would be the one getting the credit if Auburn was succeeding on offense. He's the one who did get the credit after the Baylor game for resisting Jason.
You were there in the, look, he's there in the guy that's he's the guy that's on the headset, that's on the mic to the quarterback's helmet.
Jason, you were in the press box. You were in the press conference after Baylor when he talked about resisting the temptation to call passing plays. You know,
I've said, look, the first 3 weeks, my word was patience. It was the patience was
the, patience.
Was
they were the, taking what they were being
the
given.
Was the theme of it for the first 3 weeks, and it's gone from patience to it feels like a little bit of panic. It's still a P word. It feels like a little bit of panic the last 2 weeks, and can you run it, and you know, can you be that team? And here's the problem is right now, is that Oklahoma knew Jackson Arnold, A&M knew Jackson Arnold. The one thing they said was, look, we're not going to let him run the football.
Yeah.
So they were bailing.
They really pinched the middle where he's been very successful.
So they took that part away and said, look, we're not going to let you run it. Not in this scheme, we're not. And we're going to flood the zone. And so because of that, you go, okay, well, there's no scramble room. And then you drop back to pass thinking you've got this going on and there's nothing there. All of a sudden, you hold the football and you take a sack.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're going to do that, though, Jason, why don't you – you've got Eric Dadgum Singleton Jr. out there. Why don't you let him run a slant right through the center of that defense
and take it
90 yards?
I was going to say earlier, there was a play in that game before Alex McPherson's field goal where Michael Simmons crosses the middle of the field and is wide open. And if you throw it anywhere in the vicinity, it's a touchdown. And the ball was behind his back almost. Like, they crossed guys over the middle. Here's the thing. There's guys over the middle, but you gotta throw the football to them. And there were guys in the middle of the field during that game. There were opportunities that, hey, for one reason or another, didn't get done. And so there's some times there when you go, hey, look, there's some things. But here's the problem. Slants don't work when linebackers drop. Because we saw it one time. They're dropping into that zone. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of it. So if you're not running the football, then you're not running slants. Because the RPO – slant is an RPO thing. And I've said this week a bunch of times. To run RPO, you got to R. You got to R.
Yeah, R's first.
You got to R or it's just PO.
That's right. You can't just OP
That's the thing. And so that's why you look and you go – if you're running the football, the linebacker has to believe that you're going to do something because he's got to take a step forward.
Yeah.
If he's not coming to the line of scrimmage, there's not any room to throw that ball.
I'll tell you what, Clay. If Auburn does an R against Georgia, you'll see
fans will be PO'd.
Absolutely right.
I'm gonna leave it there because that's the perfect way to end that. Good job, Dan. Amen, brother.
Good hearing from you, Clay. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Right back with more of your phone calls here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell, and Back to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Mike is next. Hey, Mike.
Well, when I called, I just had one statement to make, but Clay had a good phone call, and I thought of something else to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason we're not running the ball that much is our offensive line is such good pass blockers.
Okay, yeah.
But the real reason I called is, I tell you what's driving me up the wall and what I think is killing our team. I know everybody's excited about Cam Coleman and his ability to go up and catch the ball in a crowd. But we've got to stop giving up these interceptions on these 50-50 balls. we keep throwing up.
Yeah.
How many of them's been picked off so far?
How many of them have been thrown?
None.
That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're not enough. We just had this discussion.
Me. Yeah,
we just had this discussion last. Was it during the break?
Yeah. Maybe. Well, and Hughes talked about it too. If you're afraid to put the ball up for grabs,
you cannot.
Then you're not gonna. There are a lot of big plays that won't be made.
You cannot play quarterback without eventually throwing an interception.
You can't blame him for being afraid because now how many has he got so far this year? 10?
Interceptions?
15? Yeah, interceptions.
None.
Zero.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, no, like he hasn't turned the ball over in five games.
But you see receiver, I mean, you know, you look around, and we were talking about it a little yesterday, Jason. I mean, you see quarterbacks throwing guys open. And Jackson appears to be waiting for the guys to be open and then it's too late.
You just can't play that way at this level.
Well, somebody told me one time, if you're not making some mistakes, you ain't doing nothing.
You're not trying, usually.
There is a way to be overly cautious at quarterback and avoid mistakes, but still not really lead your offense to what you need at the position. Yeah. And Hugh talked about it after Oklahoma, that he thought there were several in just plays that ended in sacks. There were plays where Jackson probably needed to go downfield and give a guy a chance to make a play.
Yeah.
I don't know. You didn't hear as much about that there were downfield options for Jackson against A&M.
It felt like a lot of it
was short by design.
I don't think there was a lot of deep ball opportunities, but there were guys in the middle of the field and even on the sideline some that no, it wasn't the 30, 40-yard throws, but there were opportunities to throw the
ball. 10 to 20. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting today on the SEC teleconference, Jason, where Hugh Freeze was talking about ways to, you know, to help Jackson, talking about that he thinks he's really good from first to second read. It's second to third read. I'm wondering, why worry about, yeah, you know, well, let's call plays where you've got
two
a read or
go.
Two, and then that's it.
Two and go. Two in barbecue, like I said.
You know,
yeah.
After what I've seen the last two games, I think this might sound nutty, but I think we'd be better off with Jackson Arnold just calling his own plays out there. Maybe he was comfortable with.
Part of the issue right now is that if it's an RPO, he is
Jackson
calling his
is
own
calling.
Play.
He's deciding whether it's a run or pass, right?
And so a lot of this is on quarterback, and that's why I think there should be more. Nope. Hey, we're running the ball. This is a running play, I think, and it's been more of the RPO is strictly in his hands.
Yeah. If they made a change, one would think there would be some simple. If they made a change at quarterback, one would think there'd be some simplification of the offense for the new guy. Maybe explore that simplification
for the current guy
with Jackson, maybe you think about maybe calling more.
Well, we've seen and heard that in the past, where you know, and in many cases it works
because
I find something or some things you can do, and you just do them. Don't worry about trying some of the other things.
Yeah, and I
we need to target Cam Coleman at least 8-9 times a game. Five or six of them back shoulder throws.
Yeah, no,
and keep doing it until he's, you know, shows he can't, you know, go up and get the ball.
Yeah, no, it's one of those, especially against that. To me, that was the Oklahoma game where you look. There's 8 to 10 more opportunities in that game. There probably weren't as many against A&M.
No,
they basically said, look, we're not going to let that guy beat us. So it felt like, look, there's opportunities in the passing game. It probably wasn't going to be down the field to him. But you still, at times where you go, look, that's where if you can run the football and you make people have to give you an extra guy, then you create more one-on-one opportunities. Right now, if you're not running it, they can do whatever they want to defensively.
No, that's right. If they know you're not running it, that's another thing that Hugh said today. He was talking about, you know, running it, even if you only get two and a half yards. If you're doing it, they're going to have to at least come up to stop
it. Well, I mean, Alabama Saturday night, I didn't get to watch all of it, but they were the perfect example of, look, we're just going to keep running the football because sooner or later, and I think it was Dan Lanning. I used this week. Dan Lanning was like, look, we're just going to keep running it, and it's like little paper cuts. He said, sooner or later you get the jugular. Like, it reminded me of Remember the Titans, where he's like, hey, it's like Novocaine. Just give it time. It'll work. You just have to do it. You mm-hmm. have to run it, and sooner or later it will give you options in an offense.
I think our coaches are trying to, you know, be a little too cute and try to impress somebody with some. They're thinking of things that nobody else would think of.
Well, I don't know who it's impressing right now.
Leaning on the running back. We appreciate the phone call. Great stuff. Leaning on the running back has never really been Hugh Freeze's style as a head coach. But
he's running more than they have recently. Yeah.
But that's
crazy.
I think to an extent it's about playing to your personnel and not your style. We've talked about sort of, you know, what you could see different. I mean, if I know people have talked about wanting to see a quarterback change. I would point out if you change quarterbacks, not to say it won't work, but that's quarterback number five that Hugh Freeze would be starting in his 2.5 seasons as Auburn quarterback, as Auburn coach. Maybe you get different results, but I would think that reevaluating the plan is just as important as reevaluating whether or not you've got the right guys out there.
Yeah, and listen, everything that we've said, and for everything that's going on, you lost two games on the road against. I don't think those are playoff teams. I think they're good teams, but I don't think there's a great team in this league.
I was going to say they're not a lot of teams. I think there's a bunch.
Here's the thing:
much better.
What the last 2 weeks showed me is that it's not going to take much for this team to. And I said it. Look, they got a chance to beat anybody left on the schedule.
But things have got to change.
You got to get better. You got to get better. But you've had opportunities, even as bad as this been the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you've had the ball with a chance to tie or win late.
Yes.
And you had multiple chances last week.
So people have kind of burned him going, we're close. Listen, you don't have to be close to being the 1988 49ers. You just got to be close to being okay. If you'd be okay on offense right now, you're 4-1, maybe 5-0.
Yep.
Can you get to okay? Because if you get to okay, then you're going to have a chance to win. You'd like to be better than that. But if you can just get to okay, then you're like okay at home against Georgia, the way your defense is playing. I mean, you have a chance to win that game. And so can you get to okay? I mean, that's the question. I don't know if they can, but can you get there? You don't have to go far.
That's why this period with this open date here leading up to Georgia
it's huge.
This season hinges on it.
Well, here's the thing. I've said this is the first time in Hugh Freeze's tenure where there's been people that have said, oh, this must win.
Right.
This is the first time where it feels like there's real pressure.
Well, and it's win, obviously, but, I mean, do it. If Auburn wins a game 13-10 and has 150 yards total offense again, there's still going to be people going, you know.
Well, it don't matter. I mean, listen, it don't matter. There are going to be people no matter what happens.
Well, you're right.
Because I'm just telling you, people would have felt better Saturday. But if you'd have lost 47-30 to Texas A&M, people would have went, whew, man, I like that offense, but we ain't got a good enough defense to play. You got to win, but you're not going to win every game 34-0. I mean, like, it's going to be hard. But, I think people would have said, man, I feel better. You scored 30 points. Well, you gave up 47. But people would have absolutely felt better about that game than they did after that.
Well, what Auburn doesn't need is they don't need to have a repeat where they lose and offensively.
Yeah, no, you got to be better offensively. Yep. And like I said, I think defensively you've found a little bit of who you are. Georgia can score, but
it's an interesting thought though. Like if Auburn's offense had played winning football, but the defense hadn't against A&M,
people would feel much better.
After what you saw against Oklahoma,
they would feel much better.
And I think the reason is you would have seen both sides of the ball show you something in an SEC game. And right now you have a side of the ball that hasn't shown you anything has in fact gotten worse.
I think it's more about the last 10 years.
Okay.
I don't think it's about this year at all.
Okay.
I think it's what they've seen the last 10 years going, this is
– especially the last five,
yeah, but
six,
this is the pattern of going, look, like even like Gus, other than a couple of games,
mm-hmm.
even in 2019, you played Georgia and Alabama, you didn't do that. I mean, a couple of times at home, 2017 you did.
Right.
In 19's a relevant season because 19 felt like – I remember doing the show then, and the sense that you had a defense good enough to put you in a game with anyone in the country and an offense that was squandering winnable games, when that's the situation and the head coach is the guy in charge of the offense, like that's a tough situation to be in, even for a 9-3 team.
Yeah, I mean that, in 2019. And that's the thing, I think Alabama, you went out and scored 48. You had a huge game. But you lose at home 21-14 to Georgia, and it was nothing. You go two-minute offense, score a couple of touchdowns to get back in the game. You have a lead at LSU and lose 23-20, score 20. You go to Florida and
it's pretty much the only close game 19 LSU played.
And do nothing offensively in that game against Florida. But you have, you know, the 56, the 51. So it was like you had three games where you're like, this crazy. But yet it's like, well, there's three games where there's nothing really there. So it's been that this whole time. Going, look, can you find a consistency
offensive on offense. Attack? The only consistency and has
that was,
been
And that
poor.
Was one where, look, if they couldn't run the football, then it was over with.
And you've seen teams like this. The defensive performances like this won't continue if the offense doesn't get
it
better.
It makes it really hard, very rarely. Now, the difference is – How what's it look like? And because if you give up 17 early Saturday and it's 17 to nothing and your offense is not doing anything, then it gets really hard. You were always in the game in that one Saturday because your defense had played that well enough.
How bad does it get if A&M converts the drive that turns into the pick six? Like that's one.
Okay, well, listen, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's the dumbest play call of the entire day. Because Saturday – Bill will remember this one. Dan, you've seen it.
Maybe in legend, yeah.
Saturday felt like Auburn LSU 1994. Then there wasn't all the turnovers.
No.
But if Texas A&M just kneels on the ball down there and says, look, we're not even worried about kicking the field goal. We're up 13-0 or 13-3. We're going to give you the ball right here.
Auburn's
game's
not
over
gonna
with.
Score.
Game's
yeah.
over.
Auburn's
no
not.
Chance.
Auburn's not driving down no chance. And scoring. No,
it felt like that.
Right.
And like, you're throwing the football? Like, I'm like, is this Jamie Howard? And I'm like, really? I mean,
yeah.
Why are you throwing a football? Yes, that to me, that was the dumbest thing of the entire day. It was like the only chance you got to not win this game was to do that.
Auburn needs a lifeline.
And
from
you gave
the,
it
from
to
the,
him.
From the
Xavier
offense
Atkins
right now.
Played an incredible football game. One of the best linebacker games I can remember in a long time. He didn't have 100 tackles. He had 10, but the pick – a sack, a forced fumble. I mean, he was all over the place. Had a great game.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one, final segment with Jason Caldwell. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one. Final few minutes with Jason Caldwell. JC, you were over... today it was a basketball pro day, and the good news. I mean, everybody is still here, and we have a new pearl in charge. Yep. But this should be a fun team to watch.
We've had a chance. You know, I've had a chance to watch a little bit of some practices. Had a chance to watch a little bit today of this team shooting the basketball and. It's going. I mean, we said it before. It's going to be a very different team than you've seen the last couple of years. It's not going to be a half court back to the basket team. It's very skilled and it's very long. Now, it's not wide. It's not strong physically. It's going to play a little bit different. It feels more Alabama in that it's going to be up and down, shooting threes, and then you penetrate to the basket. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of half court. And they can do it. They'll do some of that stuff because you have to.
Yeah, but you don't have Janai.
But you're gonna. It's gonna be a different half court. It's gonna be moving. You're not gonna low post back the ball in. But there's a lot of options. Obviously Tahad is a guy that you look at and go, man, he's kind of the point guy. Caden Magwood can really shoot it. fun guy to watch as the other.
They got a bunch of guys
as the other point guard.
I would imagine there's going to be in the half court temptation to run sort of what you see when an NBA team has a do it all guard at you know where you can just throw a million, like the James Harden offense, the Steve Nash offense. You can just throw a million high pick and roll, you know, high screens at teams. And make them like,
well, that, like yeah, they, you're going to make them defend to Hod on the, in the like, screen and roll, but a guy like Keyshawn Hall, 6'7", 225, athletic, you can almost use him as your big screener, screen and roll guy. He can shoot.
Yeah.
He can get like. There's a lot of options. Like I said, I've watched Keyshawn Hall. He reminds me of a bigger, more skilled Alan Flanagan.
Okay.
When you think about lefty. Mm-hmm. 6'7", and so I think physical, it's going to be a fun team to watch and see how this thing goes. But everybody present accounted for today, and so get ready to roll forward. I think 2 weeks from today is the exhibition in Birmingham.
Yeah, we're getting close. Again, it's an open date, but there's a lot going on. As you said, you've had a baseball story. You're going to have another one up. There's basketball news, and obviously getting ready for Georgia next week.
Yeah, well, like I said, a whole lot going on. Check it out, auburnundercover.com. Like you said, Nathan will have basketball. He's there. Mm-hmm. Get some interviews today from Stephen Pearl. Has some basketball thoughts. Continue to do football. Baseball starts practice Friday. We'll get Butch Thompson, I think, Friday afternoon. But I'll have a story on Drew Whalen tomorrow, the transfer pitcher from Western Kentucky. So come check it out.
All right, Jason, thanks again, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, y'all too.
All right, that'll do it for hour number one. We're back with the second hour of the show. Come on in and join us.
Remember.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this hump day. First day of October, Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls here in the studio. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear Jason as he talked some baseball, football, and basketball all there in the first hour.
Yeah, it was fun to catch up with JC. If you missed any of that, check out the podcast of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com. and use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron.
We'd love for you to join us. Anything on your mind, sports-wise? Speaking of baseball, let's see, we're nearly halfway through day two of the wild card round, and we're awful close to. Well, we are now. I think we're through with day two. The halfway through, as the Cubs just fall to the Padres 3-0. So that means that the first two teams who won yesterday have dropped today. And we'll have a deciding game in the American League matchup between the Tigers and Indians. And then a deciding matchup between the Padres and the Cubs. As the Tigers and Indians, I said. Tigers and Guardians.
Yeah.
I know. I didn't even.
It's all right.
It sort of slipped off. I should not come back to it.
I call them Cleveland. I still say the Florida Marlins.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway.
Oh, by the way, did you hear the California Angels making the change? Ron Washington out?
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, Ron Washington's out.
No, I saw Brian Snitker is transitioning.
Ron Washington's out after 2 years of managing the Angels. Leading candidate to get the job, according to multiple reports.
I have not heard.
Albert Pujols could, in fact, be the clubhouse leader to be the new manager of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And as you mentioned, the Braves without a manager as well, with Brian Snitker transitioning to a role in the front office.
Yeah, that indeed is right. But anyway, I was going to say,
Wonder if they go internal, or if they look outside.
No, I mean, I keep hearing Mark DeRosa.
Yeah, a lot of folks who were big DeRosa fans there.
Anyway, the Detroit and Cleveland were tied at one going to the bottom of the eighth. And the Guardians with a five spot in the bottom of the eighth. They win that one 6-1. Interesting, Casey Mize got the start for the Tigers, but only went three. You're seeing starting pitchers in these in tight games, especially, you know, we saw it earlier today in the Padres game. Dylan Cease didn't go very long. It's like starters for teams who are on the verge of elimination being pulled after like one time through the order. So, I mean, Casey didn't pitch poorly, only gave up a run and didn't figure in the decision, obviously.
I think there's a lot of confidence in some of these bullpens.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And they've invested heavily in these bullpens. We were just talking during the break about all the different relievers that changed teams this season and how well-stocked some of these bullpens.
Yeah, there are some ridiculously deep bullpens. I mean, I'm looking up, and Mason Miller, who was unhittable as a closer for the A's, a year ago. I mean, still unhittable. He's in there throwing 104.
I mean, the Yankees
at the bottom of the strike zone as a setup guy for Suarez.
The Yankees probably have four guys who have made an all-star team in the last 3 years closing,
yeah,
you know, one place or another. Devin Williams, Luke Weaver, Bednar, Camila Duvall. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's some really, you know, some big names.
The Phillies have a deep, deep bullpen. The Dodgers, yeah, have all kinds of guys.
I don't know how many of them are healthy or effective.
Yeah,
right,
I don't
now,
know either. It's funny.
Blake,
you know,
Snell, though, he, you know, he's the old playoff
when
Blake.
He's healthy, big when game, he's healthy, he's really good.
Big game and Blake.
Doesn't hurt when Ohtani launches to get things started and the Dodgers are, you know, playing home run derby.
Yeah.
Blake's just out there going, yeah, I'll get you seven.
Yeah, he didn't get run support like that at some other stops in his career.
He didn't get run support like that earlier this year with the Dodgers.
No, and Teoscar, helping out as well.
Teoscar, I mean, and Shohei both, yeah, hitting a pair.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I'm not counting the Reds out or anything, but that felt like that game was,
yeah, that
bigger.
Yeah, that was Hunter Green.
Yeah, with Hunter Green, it felt like that game was huge for the Reds. We'll see how they respond. But the Dodgers,
who have the Reds got going tonight?
Could be in a facing a.
I've got to look and see who they have going tonight, because I know I believe Abbott was going to go game three, and Brady Singer's not even on their postseason roster. So, yeah,
They're going with Littell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Zach Littell
against Yamamoto.
Yeah,
tonight.
That's a matchup that heavily favors the Dodgers.
Yamamoto,
he was really, really good.
Yeah, unreal, untouchable. As I predicted, he would be, Bill, when I let him go for my fantasy team at the beginning.
Yeah,
of the season.
Well, you couldn't afford to keep
him. As I told you, he was untouchable at times this year.
Yeah. So right now, the Yankees on the verge of elimination at Yankee Stadium, where the Red Sox have owned them. Sox have won seven of the last eight in Yankee Stadium. And then, yes, this evening it'll be the Dodgers and the Reds. All right, we're here. It is open date week for Auburn. The Tigers, Hugh Freeze today was on the SEC teleconference, talked about a few things, saying that, you know, they've got to find some things to, you know, to make the offense work better, and speaking specifically of Jackson Arnold, talking, I wonder, we talked about it in hour number one. Hugh Freeze didn't really say it like this. He said that Jackson Arnold's been very good in making his first two reads, but saying going from read two to read three is taking a little long. And he didn't say it, but we did, Dan. I mean, I really wonder why. I mean, when you're talking about reevaluating everything, why continue to try to run an offense then that you're going beyond two reads? If you're going to talk about simplifying and you think your quarterback's very good at getting, you know, see after the first read, progressing to the second read, then say, okay, after the second read, go.
And that's against Oklahoma. It felt like Auburn was running an offense where you had where by the time Jackson was getting to a read he liked, the Oklahoma defense was already there.
Yeah,
like that. That's
he wasn't liking the fact that he was being helped up off the ground.
Yeah, and
by
I,
the time he was, if he was able to see that third
and I think,
read,
you know, different coaches would probably give you different answers as far as what you need to do to change that. But yeah, I wonder if, and I'm not saying I think you switch from Jackson to somebody else, you know, and try the same plan and things get better. I don't know about that. I think there's probably a better way to deploy Jackson than you have the last couple of weeks. But if this is the offense, like if this is what you're going
to
do.
If you want to drop back this much, then Jackson may not be the guy.
I wonder if you need to reevaluate
but
that.
But if Jackson's your guy, then you probably need to suit the offense better. The offense needs to suit Jackson Arnold better.
Yeah, I think that you look at Auburn quarterbacks in the past, right? And if you had a Nick Marshall, you know, you would call an offense a certain way.
Yeah.
If you had Jarrett, right, you would call the offense a certain way, and you would play to their strengths. I don't know if this is an offense that's necessarily playing to Jackson's strengths. And if this is the offense, then maybe
the offense
maybe
the first 2 weeks seemed to play more to Jackson's strengths.
Yeah, it did.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join us.
We have
Matt is up first this hour. Hey, Matt.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. I'm driving my truck, so y'all just kind of overlook the road noise, but I'll be quick. I won't be as positive as Jason, but I personally don't see anything coming change-wise. And the reason I say that is because last year, seems like around that Kentucky game, we were all hearing the same things. We're going to run the ball more. We're going to run the ball. And then when we come out of Kentucky and ran up down the field, and then what we do the very next week, we went back to the same offense. So I personally don't see – I don't think Hugh is going to change. I really don't. And I don't think it matters what quarterback we got. I think he's just set on what he wants to do, and that he wants to throw the ball a lot. And let me give you three stats, and then I'm going to hang up.
All right.
Because I studied these three stats. I'm going to give you three stats. The first one is – since Hugh Freeze has been there, when Auburn has rushed less than 100 yards, or I'll put it this way, when Auburn has had no 100-yard rusher, just one person, no matter if it's quarterback or running back, if Auburn rushes less than 100 yards on one person, we are 0-16. 0-16, have not won a game less than 100-yard rusher, with the outlier being only UMass, Alabama A&M, and that first Cal game, which was a defensive game at Cal.
I believe I saw Stat Tiger, who posts there on Jason and them site there at Auburn Undercover. I believe when Auburn as a team is held to less than 140 yards rushing, that number still applies. So that tells you you've got to be able. You don't necessarily have to run for 250, but you've got to be able to run the ball.
Although in the only games you've won on the road against major conference opponents, Cal's the outlier there, because at Arkansas in 23, at Kentucky last season, at Baylor this season, you did have to overwhelm on the ground.
That is right.
To win those games.
Yeah, and let me give you the other stat. If we had a 90-yard rusher, whether quarterback or running back, if we had a 90-yard rusher, we are four of those wins we won out of five. The only one we didn't win, I mean, I'm sorry, four out of the – here's the way I say it. If we had a 90-yard rusher, four out of the five losses were one-score losses, with the exception of Georgia last year. Every other game that we had a 90-yard rusher,
you're in it.
We were in one-score game. So basically, and the last stat is, if we do rush for over 100 yards, we're 11-0. Rush less than 100-yard rusher, we're 0-16. The point is if we get one person on our team to rush for at least 100 yards or close to it, we are within one-score game or we win the game. That's pretty good statistics.
Yeah, no kidding.
Anybody with walking around sense should be able to, he should be able to look at that and say, man, I didn't realize that. If I can just get one guy rushing 100 yards, it's a dadgum good chance we're going to win this game. I don't know why he can't figure that out. I think it's pride. I don't think he's stupid. I really don't. I think he's a good man. I think he's smart. I think he's just got – he won't let go of that pride.
Well, the other thing – and Jason was talking about this, though, and I think – I don't think this is done intentionally to not be able to point the finger back at Hugh Freeze. But when you drill and drill and drill your quarterback, that everything depends on the box, the numbers in the box. And if there are more players in the box, then your quarterback is supposed to check to a pass. And then when they do, the head coach, your play caller is going, well, it's not me. You know, it's my quarterback. But your quarterback's just doing what he's been taught to do because there are more numbers in the box than you're supposed to be running against.
And it feels like it's a discipline too, right? It's a discipline to commit to running the football when you have all of those, you know, play by play, you get the decision of what you want to do as an offense, and it's like a boxer. It's really tempting to headhunt, to throw everything at the head and want to go for the knock.
You gotta have some body punches.
Yeah, but you want to put some water in the basement. You want to hit some body punches in there too. They pay off down the road, but I think Hugh Freeze is headhunting, right? Like Hugh Freeze is trying to hit the knockout.
He wants that big shot. That's it. You're right. The knockout shot.
He wants the knockout punch, and sometimes, sometimes you lead with your chin. Fighting like that.
Well, it's a proven fact that if you run the ball, if you can run the ball, I'm not saying we got to run it all the time. But if you can establish the run and be a run for it, it helps your defense. It helps everything. Look at Denver Broncos on Monday night. They won that game pounding the rock down Cincinnati's throat. And I mean, we all know that if you can run the ball. I like the pass too, don't get me wrong, and I think we got some receivers that need the ball, but man, that A&M game was hard to watch, I think we're fixing to start going down the wrong path like we did last year. I think we might come out and luckily beat Georgia maybe, but then I think he'll go right back to passing. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but I don't see him changing. Anyway, I appreciate y'all taking my call, man.
Hey, appreciate the call. Thanks, Matt. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I mean, you absolutely have to be at the point where, okay, I'll believe it. I mean, we talked about it last week when we were just talking about winning the ball game. And now when it's like, you heard talk about committing more to the run last week, a good bit of talk about that, and Auburn did less running than they had prior to the Texas A&M ball game. Now you've got the open date, and you know you'll hear some more of the same things. Yes, hard to disagree with Matt. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to wonder, is the die cast, right? Is what you've seen the last 2 weeks, is that the identity, especially offensively, of this team, and they're just going to keep trying it until something gives? You know, maybe it'll work, or maybe it'll be like, I just wonder if you're going to see that kind of change, especially, you know, with a coach who has seemed reluctant to embrace a run heavy attack at Auburn consistently, right? Like, it just seems like that hasn't really been his way. And yeah, it's concerning to think that maybe he's, you know, he's trying something that you don't know if it's. I still can't get past the idea that maybe the RPO was much more of a novelty.
It was, but I mean, there's still so many teams, including NFL teams, that run some RPO. It's just not. I don't know that it is purely all just based on. All right, we're going to do this the whole game, and it's all going to be based on the box count. So. I mean, it's still working, you know, for quite a few teams, but I don't know if they're doing it exactly the way Auburn is, or if they've progressed.
Yeah, we'll see what Auburn we'll see what Auburn does, but I just wonder about the kind of changes people have been advocating for. Like, we, you know, it feels very familiar, right? And so we'll see if it's something that sticks this time. You would think if there's an offensive breakthrough against Georgia that they would find something that they can lean on. Because, the you know, the good news, I mean, you can make the case Georgia's at worst the second best team left on your schedule. Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would think so.
I mean,
we'll see. We haven't seen Missouri yet, and Missouri hasn't left Columbia yet.
Most folks would tell you.
But, that, yes, that Georgia, I mean, talent-wise, Georgia and Alabama are the two most talented teams left on
the schedule. I would say that with the rest of these games, whatever you try against Georgia, if it works against Georgia, you have reason to think it could work against anyone else you play the rest of the way.
Oh,
If it works against Georgia.
That is a big if.
If it doesn't, then you might be throwing body punches and head, you might be throwing those punches at a different
flailing wildly.
You might be throwing them at a different gym next year.
The count will start.
down for the count is where you could be.
All right, we need to get to our first break of hour number two. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with 390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Yanks with an early 1-0 lead on a Ben Rice homer. Of course, they had an early 1-0 lead on an Anthony Volpe homer yesterday, and that was the only run they scored. So.
Fun thing to look for in this game, on top of the fact that it's high-stakes baseball at Yankee Stadium, the actor who played Bobby Bacala on The Sopranos is behind the Red Sox bench. So every time every time they show a right-handed hitter, you get a shot of Bacala. I'll point him out next time.
I'll look up there and see. All right, we'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind, sports wise? 334-321-1390. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey guys. So I've been listening, and Jason was it almost like he kindly realized, take what the defense gives you, but we had two perfectly lined up games to practice what we obviously are not good at. And what we could be really good at with our receiving, with our skill players, but we haven't figured that out. But I guess my question is, I'm listening to this RPO and it seems like they're backing out. They show the thing, eight guys in the box. Okay, we're going to do this. Okay, then the end crashes down. If he crashes on the running back, then you take off with the ball. Quarterback. If he goes for the quarterback, you hand it to the running back. All of this is all for the defense. Mm-hmm. And so the defense, if it's good, is going to dictate what you do.
That is right.
And so I've always thought, if it's me, I'm the coach. I'm gonna, if it's a good quarterback that can run and get away, like Cam Newton or Nick Marshall, I'm gonna hit the quarterback every single time. I'm gonna make him pay, because if he doesn't hand it off, it doesn't even matter if he hands it off. I'm still gonna hit him, because you just make him pay. But if the quarterback's not as fast, then I'm going to hit the running back every time. And you just tell your team, hey, I'm taking out the running back, so y'all just get the quarterback. And if he can't throw it, then it's like a no-win situation. I feel like are there any top 10 teams or top 15 teams that run the RPO?
I don't know if I would say that there's, as far as leaning on the RPO as the base of the offense, probably not. Mm-hmm. would be my answer there. You see it sprinkled in at an Oregon or a Penn State or even Alabama, drop some of it in there.
Right, but a lot of them will have called plays. Yeah. There will be specific plays called, and then they'll sprinkle in RPO where that option is given. Pat, I'm with you where you need to be setting the tone for the defense, forcing them to do certain things. Then they're not going to be able to do those type things and just have you reacting.
Reacting is the operative word. As the team with the ball, you want the defense reacting to what you do. If you're reacting to what the defense is doing pre-snap, then the defense is already, they're already winning.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like when you had Nick Marshall and you go fast, they have no chance. Because they're reacting and they don't know what to do, and they got this guy's running this way and this guy's doing a sweep this way, and it's like, and you're just trying to figure out what the hell's going on, and then he keeps it and he's got that first step, and so you're beat. But they're dictating to us. They're loading the box, make it look like we're going to run. So quarterback's automatically thinking, okay, I'm not going to run it. Okay, now the defense knows, okay, he's not going to run it. Okay, so now we cover the slant, we cover this, we cover that, and so now Jackson's like, well, shit, I got nothing to do. I can't do anything.
The guys in 13. I've heard you make this point before, Pat. The guys in 13 were more open when Auburn threw the ball because defenses had been so, like, they were so worried
selling
about
out.
You're so absolutely worried about the run.
You're so worried about the run that, yeah. and it feels like with Auburn, like you have that potential this year, and instead,
but it's like you're taking Auburn out of that run possibility. And, so they know that's not going to be the play. If you would run some of those times, you're liable to pop one, like the caller was talking about earlier. When you're liable to have defenders turning their backs on the running back or whoever has the ball that's coming downfield because they're expecting a pass to be coming.
Yeah, it's almost like they figured out exactly how to beat us, and we're like dumbfounded, like, oh my god. It's like we're playing checkers right now, and it's like the RPO is designed to have a guy like Nick Marshall that is elusive runner, or a guy like Pavio who's really good at doing everything. He's good at throwing, good at all of it. But I feel like Jackson just right now, you know, it's almost like, and I heard, you know, the practice notes or whatever today where he's holding on to it still. He won't throw it. So I guess maybe they drilled in his head, as long as you don't throw an interception, we're fine, you know, and then don't run because there's eight guys in the box. Okay, so they got us checkmated. I mean, it's almost like we got to just totally quit doing what we're doing and just, like you said, just we're going to run. We're going to throw.
Well, I love what Jason was saying. You know, Jason in the first hour was saying, absolutely. Go the opposite direction. Quit being so slow and deliberate, allowing the defense to be able to do that. Go ahead and go fast and, you know, make them not be able to substitute or make those changes.
Yeah, exactly. They won't be able to load up the box. I mean, it's almost like we're doing the exactly what makes them able to do exactly what kills us. It's like it's almost like baffling. But I feel like you could get out of it if you just. But I feel like the stubbornness of the coach maybe just is going to be the problem.
Yeah, Pat. If Hugh Freeze insists on great stuff, and if Hugh Freeze insists on dropping back 75% of the time with this offense. I mean, I don't know if it's going to work with Jackson. I don't know if it's going to work with one of the other guys, but it certainly seems like it's probably not going to.
He needs to throw it. He needs to throw it. It doesn't like Jason said. I mean, fourth down. I saw it in one pro game. It's fourth down and seven, and you just throw the ball out of bounds. I mean, it's fourth down. You have to throw the ball. It's like you can't not throw the ball. It's automatically a turnover. So he has got. There is no way that we can't drop back. 1, 2, 3, throw it up to Cam. There's just no way we can't do that. I mean, that is just insane. So either we have to decide we're going to do that and make them back up and then start running. That might be what we have to do because we did it to Singleton. We could do it to him. We could do it to both sides. I mean, it would have worked. You know, it was a great defensive play on Perry. You know, that he got his hand on the ball at the last second and tipped it, and that's why Perry didn't catch it. But that would have worked. That play was going to work. It just was a great defensive play. I feel like we've got to force those deep throws, 1, 2, 3 throw, and make them back up and then run it. I think that would be the way probably to get it going, but who knows at this point.
Well, that's the other thing that's kind of surprising is, while Auburn has not had success, aside from a couple of passes to Cam, you haven't had success with downfield passing these last couple of weeks. You know, I feel like there have been enough near misses or enough throws where you feel, I mean, you have a couple to Cam, you have the one you just mentioned to Perry, where it's like you feel like that could be part of the offense, but they even got away from that seemingly against an A&M. They didn't take it. And again, is that designed? Is that Jackson? I don't know, but it feels like they've got a lot to figure out, and Hugh Freeze is going to have to break some of his tendencies to unlock this offense, and they've got some really good teams on the schedule once this bye week is over.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it, Pat. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Daniel, hang on. You're up first when we come back here for the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Wednesday. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. And Daniel, thanks for hanging on. How you doing?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well. How are y'all?
All right.
Hey, bud.
Hey, I just wanted to call in. Firstly, man, Pat is amazing in the way he can talk. He was talking about content so fast. I mean, it was so, like, I just couldn't even cover as much content. And so I always enjoy his calls. But I was wanting to call in, and after looking at the O-line, and I'm sure, you know, I hadn't caught all of today's show and this earlier week shows, but I'm sure you guys have all heard, you know, all kinds of complaints about the O-line. You know, I've caught myself the last 2 weeks sitting there on my couch going, man, I wonder what Shadow would be saying right about now.
Oh, my.
What we're looking at. but, man, wherever he's at, I hope he's doing well. Lord willing, if he's still with us. And
I don't think this is because the powers that be are meddling in Auburn's, you know, in Hugh Freeze's coaching, right, Bill? Is there any sense that?
No, I don't. I can't imagine powers that be saying, okay, don't run the ball.
Yeah, don't.
You know, let's see if we can win a game with 100 yards total offense.
This is not an issue.
No.
Right. Well, hey, I wanted to look ahead to the Georgia game. In y'all's opinion, what's kind of the matchup or dynamic that would maybe favor Auburn in scheme and game plan going forward? Thanks, guys.
That's a good question. Yeah. Georgia has at times, Georgia, I don't think is as overwhelming as they have been in the past. They have run the ball pretty well. Auburn stopped the run pretty well. Gunnar Stockton has made some huge throws. Couldn't quite drop the dime the way he did against Tennessee this past week against Alabama. Defensively, Georgia's going to be a lot to handle up front. Auburn's got to be able to run the ball. Auburn's got to get out of this third and ridiculously long situation that they seem to be in, you know, every series the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Auburn defense is going to have – there's going to be pressure on the Auburn defense to play well, but right now, the attention, the focus
is on the Auburn offense.
The heat is on the Auburn offense to get better. I mean, I don't, you know, after 2 weeks where, you know, the opponent is held to significantly below their season average in points per game, in two games where you felt like the defense did enough to win and you didn't win either of them. I think it's what can Auburn do when they've got the ball. Can they go forward on first down? Can they keep drives going? Can they put some points on the board? Can they provide – it's the baseball playoffs. Can they provide some run support for the Auburn defense? Because if they can't, you know, I don't see Auburn winning a – I don't – you know, I think eventually Georgia's going to break through, right? I think it's going to be real tough to hold that team to 10 or 13 over the course of an entire game without – eventually the Georgia offense making you pay for that. I think you're going to need some points. You're going to need the belief that you can manufacture something in the fourth quarter if you need it. And right now, Auburn, you know, that like Hugh Freeze has talked about the importance of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
What confidence should the Auburn offense have right now?
How could they have a lot of confidence?
Without major changes or a renewed belief in whatever plan they're going to use.
Here's something that's going to make you feel great. Georgia is middle of the pack. As a matter of fact, in the second half of the SEC in total defense, they are 12th in the SEC in total defense, giving up 324 yards a game, which Auburn would, you know, that was double what Auburn had this past week against Texas A&M. But the crazy thing is, it's almost all come through the air against Georgia. Georgia has only allowed 91 yards a game on the ground. They're giving up 230 something through the air. Now Tennessee is a, you know, very prolific passing team. And let's face it, Alabama is more of a passing team than a rushing team this year. So that might not give me the most confidence, because it would seem like then, you know, you'd look at that and go, well, we need to throw. We need to just throw the ball against Georgia. How's that worked the last couple of weeks?
I mean, and there have been, you know, Georgia has faced two pretty good passing
yes,
offenses.
They have.
You know, I wonder how much, you know, that influences your decisions. But, I mean, A&M had given up yards on the ground, and it didn't stop Auburn.
Well, it didn't start Auburn yeah. from deciding to see if they could get those yards on the ground.
I think after seeing what felt like a need for adjustment after Oklahoma and not seeing any of those adjustments for the Texas A&M game, I just don't know how you can
More time.
You got another week, but I don't know if that was the problem. They ran out of time.
I don't know. Hugh Freeze did say that Auburn was practicing today, something that they never do during open dates, but they have to this time.
Yeah, I wonder if they're gonna. I wonder if this is the plan, and they're gonna keep trying it and see it. You know, see if it floats. No matter how many times they have to keep fishing it out of the bottom of the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, there are a half dozen, actually seven SEC teams that are allowing fewer than 100 yards a game rushing. Auburn's one of them. I mean, Auburn's fifth, giving up 88 a game. Georgia's seventh, giving up 91 on the ground. So I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think the Auburn defense again, I think can play well enough to keep Auburn in the game at home. The offense is just they've got to come up with something.
Tell you the other thing, and it came up in the news around Sam Pittman's firing at Arkansas. Like if things don't improve at Auburn. To this point, Hugh Freeze has had a program.
He's gotten the support needed.
There's been alignment. To compete. And to this point, Hugh Freeze has had a program well positioned in the NIL space and with the support of the important money faucet folks. Will that continue? If Auburn doesn't turn it around,
if Auburn looks like they have offensively the last couple of weeks, I mean here's the thing. I mean, worst case scenario, Georgia comes in and wins 31-10, something like that. You know, where the defense hangs and maybe a turnover or a defensive breakdown late blows the game open.
Now I would say I think there are more points for Georgia and fewer for Auburn in the worst case scenario.
Oh well, yeah. But I'm just saying worst case scenario where you get beat by multiple scores.
Yes. If Georgia is
and your offense still looks bad.
If you play if it's lifeless against Georgia and eventually they start scoring and you don't. It's gonna.
How do you feel it's gonna turn around?
It'll feel like
you can't feel that way.
Well, and it'll feel like it did at the end of the Harsin era.
Yeah.
I mean, we were there in the stadium for Penn State. You were there in the stadium for Arkansas, and it's like you know when you're losing in the second half of games that aren't close. And I know Georgia's a national championship contender, but. If you got that kind of feeling, there's no turning that around. There's no salvaging that. That's when it's checkmate.
334-321-1390. You're right. You're not playing checkers anymore. You're playing dimensional chess.
And that's what's on the line, I think, as far as keeping this thing viable against Georgia next week.
The Red Sox have scored two runs to tie the Yanks at two each as they go to the bottom of the third. This is one of the more higher scoring games. We talked about it yesterday, pitching so important. I mean, the Dodgers-Reds game last night was a 10-5 game.
The big time play by Jazz Chisholm to get him out of,
start
the Red
that
Sox rally
play.
There. Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, again, Red Sox win, moves them on to the next round, and then ends the year for the Yankees.
Who got the byes in the AL? Toronto and Seattle?
Yes.
Is that who's? I'm trying to think, who's? Okay. So, and then, because I know the winner of the Dodgers-Reds series gets Philly.
And the Brewers.
Yeah, Bracken on the other side. Looks like you're probably going to have maybe a, we'll see. You know,
Yeah, I mean you're tied at a game apiece with the Cubs and the Pods.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. But the winner of that one's gets Milwaukee. You never know what you're going to get out of the Brewers in the playoffs.
No.
Overachieving.
No, you're right.
plucky group in the regular season, but that's yeah, NL feels really wide open right now.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
The City of Auburn's Household Hazardous Waste Day.
ENAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, who was with us in hour number one. Jason saying he was over at the pro day for Auburn basketball today. Quite a few folks there. And, you know, Nathan King, who works with Jason there at Auburn Undercover, among the media reporting. Stephen Pearl telling the reporters that Tahad Pettiford and Keyshawn Hall told the team today that they are not going anywhere, that they are a part of this team. And so that appears to solve the biggest concerns that a lot of folks have been having here over the last few days. Obviously, Tahad, the highest profile player on the Auburn team, and Keyshawn Hall, the transfer from Central Florida, leading scorer in the Big 12 last year, who has had an outstanding preseason and offseason, and apparently had a really, really good day today at Pro Day. You know, probably the two most sought-after players on Auburn's team. I wouldn't say they're the only, but probably the two most sought-after.
Yeah, and I just don't know, like, unless you have a real problem with the way this all went down, you know, between Bruce and Steven, I don't know what sort of upside there would be for leaving if you're one of these players versus playing out the season and reevaluating things in March or April.
If you're going to leave, you're most likely not going to be able to play until January because classes are going at just about everywhere, and it'd be very difficult to get in and be eligible for the start of the season.
Right, and so, I mean, unless you're open to taking a redshirt year and you're that angry about it that you're willing to delay your college basketball experience, you know, for a season. But I would, you know, and if you'd had a complete changeover with the coaching staff, it would be more okay.
Oh, yeah,
these, you
yeah,
know,
you didn't know any of the.
It's not what these guys signed up for, but you know, with everyone sticking around except Bruce and Bruce stepping away, not to go coach somewhere else, but to begin his retirement. I would hope that everybody's on board and nobody, you know, while again, if you have a real problem with it and you want to leave, you know, that's I understand. But like, if it's, you know, hopefully nobody's using it as like an opportunity
sounds like everybody is on board for the start of the season. And for the first time since practice has gotten started, the media was allowed not just to observe, but to write what they observed, and some interesting notes that we see from Nathan, who was over there. You know, Jason was talking about how, hey, this is really going to be a fun team to watch because they can shoot. Nathan writing that Keyshawn Hall had a fantastic day, that said no question was the best player on the court today, doing a little of everything, stealing with steals, passes, getting baskets, and saying he just dominated. But he points out, shooters said that Abdul Bashir, the best shooter on the team, but Caden Magwood not far behind, obviously Tahad. But this is a team that's got some long range shooters.
Yeah, and you know, you want to see what the adjustment is like for the guys that have never played D1 basketball before. I'm less concerned about a Murphy or a Hall just because they played
right
in the Big 12 or the SEC. It's the guys that are jumping up from.
I'm not concerned as much about Kevin Overton, to be honest.
Sure, who's also, you know, coming in from major conference with major conference experience. You're right. It's the and I think those are 4-year starters too, right? Like Hall, Murphy, Overton, and Tahad.
Yeah, I would think so.
D1 experience, I think, starting the year as 4-year starters. It's that other guy. You know, where is it going to be? You know, is it Elijah Freeman? Is it Bashir? Is it Magwood, potentially? Yeah. Like, all those guys are the option, depending on if you want the two or the three. Overton seems like he could maybe play both of them. Keyshawn Hall can play.
You know, Jovic, where's he going to fit in? As I read along, this sounds wild that he points out Elijah Freeman with ridiculous hops, saying he blocked a Kevin Overton to Keyshawn Murphy alley-oop.
Yeah. I mean, no, the Elijah Freeman.
You're blocking a 6'10 guy's alley-oop at the rim, and you're, you know, well, of course he's 6'8.
Yeah, the measurables are crazy on Freeman, and, you know, that's you know, maybe the most jarring example of, like, all right, what's the adjustment going to be like from D2 to right. D1? And, you know, Chaney took some time getting used to that, but by the end of his career was a really important part of a Final Four team. So can't just assume that a guy – don't assume anything about a guy just because he came from the D2 level, right. Especially someone that Auburn has decided to give an opportunity to. But no, I'm really interested to see, you know, how big the rotation is, how many of these guys seem like they can contribute right now. And, I mean, beyond Keyshawn and Keyshawn in the front court, right? You got Jovi. You got Sebastian. Potentially, you got a Mecca mm-hmm. who's, you know.
Yeah, now he's out. Apparently, he's limited. Didn't really go through the workouts and practice today. Good news is Keyshawn Murphy with a brace on his knee, but a full participant.
Yeah, and Auburn probably doesn't want to test the depth, you know, too strongly with its front court. You don't want to be, you don't want to have to three guys to have to shoulder the work because the other two are unavailable. I think they want the full set mm-hmm. as much as they can. You wonder how much they're going to lean on Emeka early with some more experienced guys, but he's someone that could play some important, especially if this team is as Steven said, they're going to continue trying to be as aggressive defensively as they've been. You're going to need everybody.
You're going to need, you know, those minutes are going to be tougher when you're going full speed at those.
Those fouls.
Yeah, like that's
right. You're going to need those. You need the extra
numbers available. Just about out of time. Have we got a call?
Brian, yeah, he just needs a couple seconds.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, we got about a minute, Brian.
Yeah, no, I don't even need a minute. All I want to say is, Peyton Thorne, if you're out there listening, buddy, it wasn't your fault. I apologize. That's all I got, guys. Thanks.
I appreciate it, Brian. And with that, yeah, the music is playing. Fun show today. We talked a little, obviously, some football, basketball, and baseball.
Should have Ferg either on the phone or in person tomorrow, and then David Paschal as well for our visit at the. Are we not?
No. I think we should. I was also thinking. I have contacted our buddy Barrett too. With the Braves done. Maybe we can get Barrett back on Fridays as well.
Okay, a little off-season visit.
Yeah,
from Big Bear.
Yep. So, that's hopefully what we've got lined up for the rest of the week. We're out of time, though, today on the Wednesday Drive. We will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Auburn football is back, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside to enjoy while you cheer on your Tigers.